This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the world-famous David Linthicum in the studio today. He is the Senior Vice President for Cloud Technology Partners, and many people know him because of his writing in InfoWorld. He has written books, and he's been very well encased in the whole world of cloud computing for many years now. David, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
Good morning, John. All shucks.
You know, I very rarely do I have someone in the studio who has 19,000 Twitter followers. So how'd you get that many? Are those all robots? Are those real human beings? Or who are all these followers anyway?
I have no idea. They're very generous, that's for sure, because I rarely post on Twitter other than all my blog posts. So I just write everything auto feeds out to Twitter. And people like to read it, so I'm going to keep doing it. So we'll just keep increasing. 20,000 next week for sure.
Well, after this broadcast, I'm sure there'll be at least 20,000. We are lucky to grab David. I got a hold of him a couple days ago. I said, just if you're in town, let's grab and do a quick interview. And he happened to be in between appointments and speaking invitations. I guess you were in New York earlier this week.
Yes, I was actually at Structured Data, which is an event put on by GigaOM, just really talking about big data databases and integration in the cloud. And it's a lot of deep dive in terms of where big data is going. There was a lot of government representation up there, and it was great to see all these new database technologies that are out there competing, giving the big boys a run for their money.
You know, this is an incredibly hot topic. I'm sure you well know that the federal government is getting their arms twisted to move to the cloud, and the cloud this and cloud that, and you go to the White House and you hear it all over the place. So I thought what we'd do is take someone like you who has a lot of good commercial experience and some federal experience and see if we can apply any of those lessons from Wall Street, from Chicago, from L.A., and apply it down here on K Street in the federal government. And I think that's what I'm going to do is come up with some just general topics and say, well, this is what's going on in the commercial world. How does it have application in the federal world, or does it have application? I think that's a good way to bounce through different topics here. And you open up with Capitol Hill. Got to open up with Capitol Hill here. So I was up at Capitol Hill 2 weeks ago. Met a guy named Tom Young, representative from Indiana. Good guy. And a guy named Mark Langley, president of PMI. And they were talking about federal IT professionals. And they said, you know, there's a lot of good people who work for the government, but you know what? Their hands are tied. They really can't take advantage of a lot of the solutions available in the commercial world because of security requirements, hiring process, the siloed nature of the federal government. So would you agree with that? Do you think the federal government can learn lessons from you and people out there in the real world?
Yeah, I think they can, and I think they are. I mean, if you look at the CIA contract with Amazon Web Services, it was just awarded about 6 months ago after a battle with IBM. We understand that the government is able to understand cloud computing and take advantage of cloud computing, and certainly DISA, and certainly a lot of the civilian agencies are starting to move in that direction, albeit slowly. However, as people are modernizing their computer systems, looking to build new data centers, they're asking the question: you know, should we be doing this? Should we be sharing infrastructure? And should we be doing things where we don't have to go through hardware and software cycles that take, you know, procurement cycles that take 2 years? We're able to allocate the stuff that we need to go off and satisfy the mission to, in essence, get the processes done and in essence, take care of the business of government without a lot of back end inefficiencies. And I think that's what cloud computing can bring them. And they know that now.
They do. And you know, I know there's a lot of bad people up on Capitol Hill, but this guy, Tom Young from Indiana, he was an IT consultant before he got elected, and he understands basic concepts, and he gets it. And he said, you know, in the commercial world, let's say for Linthicum Industries, if there's a project that's easy for a commercial company to move around resources and solve a problem, in the federal government, they can't do that because of agency restrictions and security restrictions. It's a limitation that everyone who's listening to this has.
Yeah, it is. And I think that ultimately you have to consider the compliance issues when you look in the security issues that you have to consider when moving into the cloud. However, you know, there was a study done a year ago, where actually the majority of breaches and exposures that are found during audits in companies that were leveraging both on-premise and cloud computing were with the on-premise systems, not necessarily with the cloud. And so what we're finding as we're rolling out cloud systems, they're rolling out in a big way right now, so, especially in the commercial world, is that ultimately it really goes to the amount of rigor in terms of your security design and your governance design and how you build these systems as to how efficient and how secure they're going to be. And I think the government's finding the same thing. Ultimately, if they put enough effort, time, and technology into securing the cloud, they're going to end up with a much more cost-effective system that has the potential of being much more secure than many on-premise systems today.
You know, I just moved, and so I went from house A to house B. And what I noticed is that there's a lot of junk that I just threw out. I mean, I had a dumpster full of junk, and now I'm in this new house, and I can find stuff real fast, and I have a basement full of stuff that I'm probably not going to use. But you know what? There's a lot of stuff that was just sitting there and not practical, and maybe in the information technology world, this can be old applications that aren't used, maybe some databases that aren't frequented, and maybe the move to the cloud increases efficiency, just like you get efficient when you move your house.
I think that's a great analogy, John. And as we're migrating companies and government agencies into the cloud, they are looking at their legacy junk,
right,
that are too expensive.
Get
that
a dumpster,
can get,
huh?
Yeah, get a big dumpster and throw it in there that they can get rid of. And they're looking to reduce their data center footprint that they have, and basically do things much more effectively and efficiently. So a lot of legacy applications are either modernized or tossed away and replaced with other newer applications. Things are combined, infrastructures combined, and we're just getting more efficient, not just with cloud, but with distributed computing in general, more effective and efficient in doing our jobs. And a lot of this older stuff that's been around in the government, you know, for the last 30 years, and I mean, they're keeping a lot of hardware vendors alive, I think, are being rethought right now, which I think is good, because modernization, moving to new technologies, is much more effective, much more efficient, and ultimately able to deliver more to the taxpayers, which is what they're trying to do right now.
I saw my wife going through some of the clothes that I have, and you haven't worn this in 10 years. You haven't used this. Look, it's dirty. It's old. It's bad. And my son found Duplo blocks in the basement that he had to use. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has to be thrown out when you make this transition. And I'm just trying to come up with an idea where looking at security in cloud applications, if you take and move from a premises system to the cloud, it's going to force you to take and list exactly what kind of security requirements you need, and you may have overlooked them in the older system.
Yeah, ultimately encryption, the ability to use identity-based management. A lot of technologies that weren't available 20, 10 years ago when we stood up these systems are available now in the cloud. And so as we move these systems into the cloud, we modernize the security. We become better at encryption, you know, better at single sign-on, better at identity management. And these are geeky buzzwords for saying that it's much more easier and effective to leverage these very complex distributed systems to meet your needs. And so people who are leveraging cloud are going to be able to secure it from their device, say a mobile device, all the way up into the cloud. The information at rest is going to be secure. The information in flight as it moves down to the people who are consuming the information is going to be secure, where in the past it was just a single lockbox. We put everything behind a wall. And I think those days are long over. As we're carrying around these mobile devices, everything that is distributed in nature that requires an identity, human beings, machines, things like that, ability to assign them an identity and basically allocate the resources they're authorized to see and credential correctly to them really is the path of the future, whether you're going cloud or not. And so, but cloud computing really kind of brings that as a default.
You know, I mentioned the recent move I had. I used a real estate agent, and also they're part of a broker. And so there's real estate brokers involved. And there's something called a cloud broker. So maybe you can tell the audience exactly what a cloud broker is, kind of a new concept for me.
Well, a real estate agent is a great, real estate broker is a great analogy as well, John. You're full of great analogies today. The reality is the cloud broker you go to a single entity and you say, I would like storage. And they go, okay, well, we have Amazon, we have Rackspace, we have Microsoft that are able to provide storage, which is the best storage for the price based on your needs and what you're looking to do. And it's able to broker the proper cloud service to you through a single API or single access. So you're assured, relatively assured, that you're getting the information you need, that you're getting the right cloud service you need to meet your needs. And whether that's compute or an application or all those sorts of things, going through a cloud broker, if you don't know a lot about cloud computing, will speed access to the exact right cloud provider that you need to get to.
Providing they don't have AWS on their business card or MSTF or any of those nasty acronyms, huh?
Yeah, you got to be very careful, because if cloud brokers are in bed with somebody, then obviously it's going to be not necessarily a fruitful relationship, but they're independent and moving forward, and they're truly automating the brokering of these services, that can be a benefit to you.
Yeah, brokers in the purest sense of the word never own. They just represent owners, and that's a hard task to accomplish here. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the Commerce Department. They're taking 800 websites they have. They're going to move them to the cloud, and they're going to consider using a cloud broker for that. And is a cloud broker going to be the usual suspects in town here with the well-known acronyms? Is it going to be someone different? Is it going to be pull a guy in from Austin who can actually have an objective opinion on how to move systems to the cloud? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have David Linthicum. He's a Senior Vice President, Cloud Technology Partners. More information on his company, you can go to cloudtp.com, cloudtp.com. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the world-famous David Linthicum. He is a well-known blogger, well-known in the Twitter world, the Twitterverse, and we're talking about federal government and the cloud. And we started by talking just these big general concepts about moving to the cloud, whether or not you can apply commercial lessons to the cloud. And we talked about the Commerce Department. They're looking at moving 800 websites to the cloud. They're talking about maybe bringing in a cloud broker. And my question is, should they go to the usual suspects in, you know, the suburbs of Fairfax and Washington, D.C. and bring someone who is an ex-govy to make these suggestions? Or should they go to Arizona and pluck a 22-year-old kid out of there or a 25-year-old kid who's got a good batting record and say, hey, figure this out? It's a tough question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a tough question. And of course, in government acquisitions, it's never that simple. So they have to go with, go out to a bidder and, you know, all these sorts of things to an integrator. And it's a large process. It's a process I'm going through with a couple of contractors right now. And I recall why, you know, selling to the government is so difficult. But what I would do were I these guys is start with the requirements. So you have 800 websites that need to migrate someplace. Okay, what are the performance issues, security issues? You know, are we going to make the same mistakes that he did at healthcare.gov in terms of scaling and providing these consistent services and design considerations, all these sorts of things? And then once your requirements are known, you come into a common set of things that you need to get to in terms of performance characteristics, in terms of design characteristics, in terms of resiliency, and then you back those into a solution. And what they may find is that a cloud broker is exactly the right solution. They may find that certain websites need to reside on Amazon, certain websites need to reside on Rackspace, certain websites need to reside internally for whatever reason, certain databases need to be attached to these certain things. And they're going to end up with a very complex solution, but chances are, it's, if you think through it and do the proper architecture, it's going to be the right solution that you bring to bear. Now, people don't want to hear that. They want to hear Amazon. They want to hear Microsoft. However, ultimately, that is the solution that the government needs to move into. And so best-of-breed technology, multi-cloud technology seems to be the path that people are taking these days.
I never forget, I was in college, and I put a water pump on my car once, and I took off the 5 bolts, and I couldn't find the 5th bolt. I was putting it back in. I just couldn't see it. I looked and looked for a half hour, went across the street, got a friend of mine, said, Rick, come over. He looked, I said, it's right there. It was an outside, saw the bolt. I said, and I put it in, drove to Florida the next day. When someone is considering moving a bunch of websites to the cloud, I almost think you almost have to get someone who has a different skill set to look at things, because they're going to find the bolt that you can't see and it's right in front of your face.
It is right in front of your face. And so, you know, outside consultants are good, you know, whether in even some of the larger integrators who come in and basically work with the Commerce Department and other civilian agencies as well are good to kind of take a look at what you're looking to do. Because number one, different perspective, but also things that you typically haven't considered. You know, so one of the things that, you know, when you go into use kind of another analogy, but you go in and get a diagnosis on a particular injury that you have. Before you get surgery, you're typically going to go get another diagnosis because
if you're wise,
because you may end up going through some unnecessary surgery, which isn't a good thing. And so same thing with moving into the cloud. People are going to have different architectural opinions as to where you need to move to based on their own biases and their own experiences. And your ability to find somebody who's able to bring direction to go actually and get consensus and making sure you're picking the right path ultimately is where you need to go. I mean, if you look at some of the mistakes that are being made in the government right now, it's not necessarily considering a multitude of solutions. It's going in there with blinders on, with the ability to kind of just consider one path and one way of doing it. And they end up running into a wall at some place, not because the technology is bad, but the technology was misused in this case on the particular problem they're looking to bring it to. So let's not make those mistakes now that we're changing platforms again.
You know, to go back to the fixing the automobile If you reach for a 9/16 wrench and you accidentally grab a metric wrench, you can do some damage. So you don't want to have the right tool for the right application. I think that's what's important. We started by talking about Capitol Hill and up there in the Rayburn Building and talked to the high-level folks. I talked to Mark Langley, who is the president of PMI. 800,000 PMPs floating around the world today, thousands in the federal government. And he said the challenge that many of the people in the federal government have is there's not an obvious career path for federal IT professional to move up. And what they're trying to do is work with Congress and the CEO Council and try to come up with a valid career path. Is there a career path in the commercial world? Is that a valid comparison to saying, well, in the commercial world, there's a career path, but there's none in the federal government? I don't know if that's a good statement or not.
Well, there is a career path in the federal government, and you get into the executive ranks, but then there's CTOs and CIOs and directors and things like that that you do run into. But they're few and far between, and they typically may not have the technical background that a lot of people have had. So if you're really good with technology, whether you're in the government, you're a govy as a career, and or you're in the commercial world, you find that you're going to hit a ceiling as you get larger, as you get up higher and higher in the organization. I hit it myself. Where they don't necessarily put a they certainly put a premium on your skills, but they want you to use your skills, and therefore getting into leadership positions and management positions and things like that are a bit difficult to do. So you have to kind of change, you know, make sure you maneuver your skill sets in the proper direction to get where you need to get to. It's not impossible, but a lot of commercial companies, specifically a lot of technology companies, are putting in career paths so technologists can move up. I mean, if you look at the new CEO of Microsoft, he was in essence a technologist who became the CEO. If you look at the CEO of other high-tech companies, they're in essence technologists became the CEO. If you look at some of the manufacturing organizations and the Global 2000 companies out there, it's not as easy. Ultimately, people who move up the organization are people who are going to be more politically savvy, more connected, and who know how to play the game and are going to drive up, and they're not necessarily going to put a value on the merit. And I think people need to start putting value on merit. And I do, you know, certainly suggest that within my client base and certainly suggest that with people I run into. And we have to promote people who are able to bring value to the company. And that means people who understand technology as well as other kinds of skills in these companies.
So if you're listening to this radio show and it's actually over 80 degrees and you want to contact David, they can get a hold of you at cloudtp.com and maybe come in and work with a federal group here. Is that right, David?
Yeah, come on in. We'll love to hear your story.
I think they'd love to hear your story. I think your story is local yokel kid from, you know, Washington, D.C. area, very successful all over the world, cloud specialist. Maybe he has some insight that maybe the federal world can take advantage of. He's right in your backyard. I mean, why not? When I first thought of, I used to read David years ago, and I always thought he's in California. He said, oh, this is a California guy. Well, he sounds like a California guy. He turns out he's right here in Reston. I mean, isn't that amazing?
Well, I love the D.C. area. I've been here all my life. I'm never leaving.
Great. There's a local D.C. guy by the name of Alan Paler. You know him, just up the road. I love me some Alan. He's a great guy. I've known him for many years. He was quoted in a magazine article in eWeek in February, and I thought this was a great line. He said, you know, federal IT professionals are so busy repairing ports and satisfying auditors that they're not locking down their systems. That's a great line, isn't it? Would you agree?
I would agree.
Oh, I just can't believe. So my guess is, to go back to the cloud illustration here, is if you're getting forced to move to the cloud, there are centralized ways to enforce compliance to rules that were maybe more difficult in a more federated environment.
Yeah, and there's actually a name for it that I hate. It's called compliance as a service, that the cloud providers are starting to banter about. But I understand the meaning of it. So if I'm moving into, say, healthcare, for example, so if I'm a government agency and I have to deal with healthcare information, healthcare data, I'm subject to a variety of different kind of compliance issues, you know, such as HIPAA and PII control and things like that. So instead of me becoming an expert in how to handle HIPAA data or me an expert in handling secure patient information, I'm going to go ahead and outsource that to a cloud provider that's able to do that as a service and basically has those processes built in and those tools built in to their existing infrastructure. And so, you know, AWS and Rackspace and Hosting and Carpathia and all these other organizations that focus on that area, they're typically going to be more successful at doing that than me basically trying to figure that out myself and hire people, compliance audits, all those sorts of things. You know, people can guide me through it. And, you know, we're using some great analogies. I'll give you another great analogy. It's like a bank. I can certainly hold my money, you know, in my mattress. You know, however, if I give it to a bank, all these regulatory compliance and insurance and all these other things, in terms of managing my money and making me money and, you know, adding more value, they're going to be better at it than I am. And so that's why we choose to put money in the bank versus in our mattress. And well, same thing in the cloud computing world. So we got to quit trying to, you know, do everything ourselves. And if it's a commodity kind of process, such as compliance management, healthcare, retail, you know, finance, government regulations, things like that, let's let other people centralize it and do it for us. And therefore, it's going to be much more, much less expensive, much less risky. And actually, we're pushing the risk onto somebody else. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, in the leasing world, it's called other people's money. Maybe this is other people's risk. Maybe this is the shift the risk to a company that can automate it and distribute more evenly through a cloud application.
Yeah, we used to call it OPT, other people's technology. That's yeah, what you want to use.
I like it a whole lot. Let's take a break. We come back, talk more about your Twitter presence, and I'll give you some examples of cloud problems I've encountered in the studio here with guests and see what your take is on them. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, world famous David Linthicum, Senior Vice President, Cloud Technology Partners, and Cloud Computing Analyst for InfoWorld. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy and Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have a top-notch comedian named David Linthicum, who kind of made me laugh right before we opened up this segment. David is a Senior Vice President in Cloud Technology Partners, and he's also a well-known blogger at InfoWorld. And so my first question out of the box, if you need to blow this out of the window, do you have a blog? I ask everyone that. Might as well ask you that, David.
Yes, I have a blog, John.
Okay, how many do you have and how many have you written?
Oh, boy. I blog in a number of different places, but the most read blog would be InfoWorld. And also blog for GigaOM Pro on the research site. Do some news blogging there as well as post a what's called a weekly update, which is kind of what happened currently in the week of cloud computing. But, you know, blog all over the place. I got an article in Datamation this week. And, you know, anybody who asked me to write, I feel privileged and honored and have enough low self-esteem to go ahead and take that gig. And so anybody who will publish me, I will write something for them.
Well, a couple of book publishers have published you as well. How many books have you written, David? I'll throw you a toss, easy ball here.
Co-authored and authored 13 books. My last book was Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence in Your Enterprise, which is a very geeky way of saying this is a cookbook on how to use cloud computing. And new book coming out later this year is going to be Full Contact Cloud Computing, which is going to be with Wiley, which is a new publisher. But enjoy writing some books, getting some ideas out there, and it's a lot of fun, believe it or not.
Yeah, I've had many book proposals rejected. You apparently have had book proposals accepted, so I have to put a little feather in your hat for that one.
John, I think I probably had more book proposals rejected than you have. I guarantee if we compare notes, you'll find that my stuff's tossed out in the garbage more than anybody's out there. A lot of bad ideas over good.
Well, you must have some good ideas because there's a report from Huffington Post that lists you one of the top 100 cloud computing experts on Twitter, but not just the top 100, the top 10, aren't you?
Yeah, that was nice. It was when that thing came out. I pay somewhat attention to Twitter, not a ton of attention to Twitter. And it was nice that the content's moving out there. So everything I write and publish, I'll put out there as a tweet, and people will read it and they'll post some comments back. It's a great thing about social media. I get this instant feedback. I can write a blog article, hit a button, it's out there. Goes out on Twitter.
Bang, you're an idiot. You're an idiot.
Yeah, you're an idiot. Well, it's okay. I mean, they got my number,
Talk
right?
Talk to my wife.
Yeah, really. Yeah, they got my number. But anyway, it's this feedback that comes back, and it's always, you know, always positive even if it's negative, because people will challenge my thoughts and thinking and things like that. And it kind of the arena of ideas is where you know, come up with new innovative thinking.
I once had a listener, one of my interviews, said, Gilroy, you're an idiot. You know what you're talking about. And I said, well, come on in. And so we did 1 hour interview, and we went back and forth on some, because he was a technician who was actually in data centers, pulling cables, beating his head against the wall. Then he listened to my interview, and he said, well, you have no idea what you're talking about. I got him in here, and he was a real good interview. I thought it was a great way to take an enemy and make him into a friend. But I think he understood some limitations of verbally describing situations. And I think we both learned a lot. I have a blog. It's called the Tech Tuesday blog. I'll be blogging about this interview. It is kind of technical, kind of social media, a lot of different things. Social media is important. We talked about blogs. We talked about Twitter. But I think what's really important for many of our listeners is this whole concept of big data and new data. I'm sure the conference had Hadoop up there and Cloudera and all kinds of folks who were giving reports. What is the current thinking now for big data? Is something like a petabyte, a minimum, a maximum? Or what's the current thinking now for this big data in the cloud?
Yeah, that was an argument. One guy said it was big data is when you have to page down. The other guy said it's got to be a petabyte or more. I think it really is just getting to massive databases that we currently couldn't cull through in a reasonable amount of time. And so with the Hadoop world, what I call the whole Hadoopy world, you know, so Cloudera and certainly Hortonworks and a bunch of other guys are in that space and doing great right now, is the ability to kind of take all of our business information, whether it's structured or unstructured, and put it in a distributed file system, distributed database system, and have some mechanisms able to go across them to answer questions that we have, how our business is doing. Or in the case of the government, there's a big data application in terms of dealing with IED locations or doing predictive analytics as to where they're in. That saves lives. Or the ability to do predictive analytics in terms of how our current health is relative to massive amounts of information that are out there around people who had issues in the past, and be able to diagnose things. And so the data science and kind of reinventing business intelligence is occurring out there. You know, big data is the buzzword, but all it means is that we're able to go through massive amounts of information in sub-second time to get information, access to answers to questions that we need answers to for business or the government. And it's a revolution right now, and it's also a killer application for the cloud.
In an article you published just this morning, you've run into cloud experts who look at you and say, David, I've been doing cloud for 30 years. And you got to slap that one down, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Because I'm old and I did timeshare in my initial, in fact, I worked for Boeing Computer Services, which was a timeshare company. Cloud computing is different. So cloud computing is the ability to do self auto-provisioning, scaling, those sorts of things. It's not necessarily just sharing infrastructure. And so a lot of people out there kind of look at cloud computing as timesharing. And in reality, there are certain patterns that are the same. And I even use timesharing as an analogy for cloud computing when explaining it to people. However, ultimately, cloud computing is something different. It's a revolution in the way in which we consume these assets in certain ways. We're able to configure and reconfigure cloud-based systems into solution, which provides us with agility. We're not buying waves and waves of hardware and software. Every time we want to build something, we're just going ahead and rent it directly out over the open internet, out of the cloud. And it is truly a revolution in terms of how we're dealing with platforms. The patterns are the same: storage, compute, data. All those things don't change. In fact, if you understand those things, you'll definitely understand the cloud. But it is not time sharing.
I have my oldest daughter doesn't own a car. Doesn't want to own a car. She says, "Dad, when I want a car, I'll just want to get these day rentals and move on from the metro stop." It's just it's a different concept and a different approach. So when you talk about, well, that's just a car rental, she said, "No, it's not like the old car rental from years ago when you get a national car rental and you're in Las Vegas and drive around." No, it's completely different, but it's a concept that's interesting and different for many people listening. I'm also a geezer, and I teach over at Georgetown. And I tell my students that I went to high school with Abraham Lincoln, and they always correct me and say, he didn't go to high school. They don't doubt that I'm that old. And what I've seen over the years is a product will come out, and it'll mature, and it'll alter and change. And when I look at big data and Cloudera and Hadoop, I say, you know, it's been 4 or 5 years now. It's probably matured. I think the technology's not going to impress anyone anymore, probably applying the technology. And what seems to be happening is people are saying, well, the technology can do this and this and this and this and this and this. Now let's backstep. And what about the process? What about this big data that we have? Is that what's happening with the maturation of some of these products?
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming more purpose-built database. And so we have information in existing what are called legacy systems. And, you know, nine times of 10 is Oracle or IBM, or another big player. And as we're moving into these purpose-built databases, we're understanding different ways of culling through information. So, you know, back when I got out of college, everything was moving to the relational model, which is a table, 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 table. And it was certainly an easier way to understand and apply information. But there were other models out there, such as Object and Codasil and NoSQL databases and other things that just kind of made more sense. And right now, we're rethinking databases. We're looking at information in terms of how we're going to store it, the models we're storing it in, the technology we're storing it. We're finding that there's certain performance advantages and scalability advantages and actually information organization advantages that exist in these models. And so a lot of very innovative young people, you know, got into this space about 10 years ago and started questioning the existing database stuff and started building technology that's able to give the existing legacy stuff a run for the money. And so now we're seeing migration. Certainly in the new application development, it's not relational all the time. It's not going to be Oracle all the time like it used to be in the past. It's going to be, you know, Hadoopy kinds of stuff. It's going to be object-based. It's going to be typically NoSQL, and it's going to be purpose-built for the applications you're moving into. And I think that's a great thing.
It's almost a customization in some ways.
It is a customization in some ways. Almost like if we're building a custom vehicle, you know, whether it's a rock climber or it's a stock car or it's a drag racer, it's going to have different equipment on it based on what it's purpose-built to do. And obviously, you're not going to take a drag racer and try to climb rocks with it. However, a drag racer that's specifically built to run down a quarter-mile track is going to do great, you know, versus a rock climber on the same quarter-mile track. And so we're becoming better at understanding the value of the technology and applying it in the right ways. And cloud computing is contributing to that because we're able to access the technology, you know, for a couple of bucks a day, you know, versus going out there and buying a couple $1 million worth of infrastructure, which I've had to do in my career. And those days are over.
We're going to take a break and come back. I'm going to do the devil's advocate here and say, okay, Dave, tell me why we should not use the cloud. And maybe the federal government has some applications where they should move to the cloud, and just try to mix it up here and play the devil's advocate a little bit with you. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with world-famous David Linthicum, Senior Vice President, Cloud Technology Partners, and he also writes a blog for InfoWorld. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have David Linthicum. He is a Vice President, Cloud Technology Partners. He also has written a blog for many years for InfoWorld. If you want to get information on his company, you can go to cloudtp.com. Based in Boston, but presence all over the United States, don't they?
All over the United States. When I joined CloudTP, I said I'm going to work for the nicest, smartest guys out there, and this is the firm.
Bunch of MIT folks? Is that what the company is?
Cloud Technology. I think there's some MIT grads in the staff, but it's a bunch of Cambridge Technology Partners, people who worked together in the past that have known to work and be successful together, that reformed the company, and it's a great idea.
We talked about Twitter earlier. Your Twitter handle is at David, LINTHICUM, at David Linthicum, and join the 19,000 other followers. And not many tweets, but people must read them, huh?
Yeah, people do read them. People love to, you know, go back and forth and argue on my Twitter feed. And sometimes I participate and, you know, sometimes I don't. But I do learn all the time, whether it's good or bad.
I was at your Twitter feed this morning. I saw the picture of this book from 20 years ago with a big shark on it. And you were proud of it. Yeah, I was one of the contributing editors to this big shark book. It looked pretty scary, didn't it?
It was Killer Dosh Utilities, and it was a doorstop. It was 6 inches thick, and I think there was 20 authors on it. And it came with a CD, which they all did at the time. And I wrote a couple of chapters, and I was very proud of that book when it first came out because it was the coolest looking book that I've ever written.
It's you can go to the Twitter feed and look at the picture. It is kind of an impressive picture, especially if you remember Jaws from the 70s and 80s and whatnot. Before the break, we talked about applications for cloud, and I kind of teased up, well, maybe the cloud's not always the answer. And maybe give some quick guidelines, David, for where it may not be a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to lose sleep over the security aspect of it and you're concerned about things getting taken in the cloud and, you know, it bothers you that you think the CIA could be calling through it or the NSA could be calling through it, then it's not for you if you're concerned about that. And the reality is there's certain security situations where the cloud's contraindicated, and I spot those all the time. And so if the risk of moving something into an external infrastructure outweighs the benefit, which in many cases it will, whether it's healthcare or finance, things like that, and the cloud isn't a good fit. If you're moving applications out into the cloud and those applications are tightly coupled and therefore not architected correctly for the cloud, then those aren't good candidates to move to the cloud. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we do is do triage on applications to look at the architectures and see if they need any refactoring or rewriting, you know, as you move them into the cloud to use some of the cloud native features. But all applications are not good fits for the cloud. Information where the data is tightly coupled to the application may not be a good fit for the cloud, depending on the architecture. And there's if there's performance issues where you're dealing with applications that are too chatty, and so in other words, they're communicating back and forth over the open internet excessively, there's going to be latency because the open internet is probably going to be a high latency network versus an internal network. You know, those aren't good applications for the cloud. There's lots of reasons not to move to the cloud, just like there are reasons to move to the cloud. And one of the things that people need to do is pick the right applications that are going to move to the cloud. One of the phenomenons that are going on out there right now is that companies have a tendency to pick the wrong applications for their first push into the cloud. And it adds a lot of complexity, adds a lot of risk, and in many cases they fail. But they perhaps picked an application that had no business and moving into a public cloud provider or even a private cloud provider. So you have to kind of understand your own requirements, understand your applications, understand your information you're moving into the cloud, understand the cost models, understand the governance models, understand the security models, and get smart in terms of where you're going before you actually make the move.
Makes sense. Everyone who sat in that chair has taken this test, the 10-question test. Everyone from Vince Cerf to Todd Park to Jimmy Wales. So I'm going to give you my technology survey to find out if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. So, David, I break into your house tonight, and how many desktops do I find floating around your house?
Five.
Okay. And how many cell phones have you personally bought in the last year?
Two.
And we know you had your own personal Twitter feed, and we know you have several blogs. That's easy. Do you use any personal online backup services?
I use both Mozy and Dropbox.
Interesting. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone.
How many apps on that phone have you used in the last 30 days?
50.
Wow, you are a nerd. That's a lot of points. Break into your house tonight. How many tablet devices do we find out there?
Half a dozen.
Phew. Interesting. What social networking sites you active in?
Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Okay. Last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic.
What's paper? My. You got a book coming out in the fall. You better know what paper is, David, huh?
Ebook only, I hope. No, it's paper and ebook, but you're right.
I'm going to have to run these through my UNIVAC in my basement, and I'll print something out with a green bar and put it in the U.S. mail with a 50-cent stamp. Is that what they are now? I guess it's 50-cent stamps. I don't know. I guess you have to buy them and put them on another piece of paper.
What's a stamp?
What's a stamp? A timestamp, you know, when you're in and off your cloud application. We know that.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. I'd like to know what the Nationals are going to do this year. My son and I go down and like to see baseball games in the summer. So what's going to happen to cloud computing? You think this transition from the federal government is going to be easy, hard, strong, long? 5 years from now, we're looking back, we're going to say, I can't believe we had servers down the hall. What's going to happen to the federal government with cloud computing in the next 5 years?
I think it's going to be a rather slow trudge into the cloud for the government. I think you're seeing procurements on the streets right now, which are cloud, designed for the cloud and have cloud in them. Certainly, the CIA use of Amazon Web Services really kind of took away a lot of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Evidently, we're willing to go do it, even with the most secret organizations out there. So it's going to be attached to a lot of procurements. And as the procurements become awarded and things start getting implemented, you're going to find a lot more cloud out there for the buck. Amazon's going to be used. Rackspace is going to be used. Azure, Microsoft, IBM, HP, all these things are going to provide hosting for cloud-based systems. But you're not going to see the inflection point. It's just suddenly going to be a little more, a little more, a little more, a little more, a little more. And suddenly about 2016, we're going to look and we're going to see maybe 5 to 7% of existing government IT that's going to be cloud-based. And as time goes on, it's going to be more and more and more. And perhaps at a certain point, we are going to see an inflection point where suddenly there's going to be mass migration over into the cloud. For the government, I'd say it's about 2020. For the commercial world, I say it's about 2016, 2017, where that inflection is going to occur.
Good prediction. We're going to have to hold your feet to the fire on this one. When you said Azure, I just immediately flashed on 20 years ago in Microsoft and Bill Gates talking about operating systems called Windows 95 and products like that. And Microsoft has never been the newest with the bestest and the firstest. They've always been, second or third, but pretty strong proffering. I see Azure copying other organizations, and I see other organizations copying others. And I don't know if this is a real wise move for these large companies in the cloud. Do you see a lot of people copying? I'll name names. AWS, I see people copying them. It just seems like a suicidal move.
Yeah, it does. I mean, one of the things I would instruct people to do is be more innovative on their own. You know, if someone actually has penetration and dominance in a certain area, such as AWS with infrastructure as a service, then don't try to do that. You know, go off and build something different that's going to provide different value. So this fast follower strategy that people love to do, where they look at success and then therefore try to copy it and get into the market, I think your ability to do that, specifically Microsoft's ability to do that, are long over. And so if you own the share of the market, you're going to own the share of the market. And if you're not in that market, then figure out an innovative way to get in the market unto yourself. So get into the pattern of the market, but don't necessarily try to copy somebody. So object storage, things that Amazon dominates in, massive compute, super compute, those sorts of things. Those are already taken. Do something else. But, the big guys like HP and Microsoft and IBM and all those folks, they envy AWS, and they're trying to follow them as quickly as possible right now.
I was meeting with a guy from Amazon Web Services about a year ago, and it was a big, important day for him. I said, why is it so important? We're actually going to go out and meet one of our customers face-to-face. And I said, well, what's unusual about that? We never do. Everything's done online. He says they distribute most of their invoices, all done online. They never get to actually go face-to-face in front of someone. It's just that model seems to be so different from the standard traditional Microsoft model. And I realize there's new products coming from Microsoft, and I look at what they're doing in other areas. I just don't know if they're going to be able to flex as easily as they should with this new guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think AWS was a technology-driven company, and they didn't like to answer phone calls. Everything was email and electronic with them. And so now realize
I know the personality type.
Now they have to hire human beings to go out and actually write proposals and bids and meet people and things like that. And AWS is hiring like crazy with salespeople who actually know how to do that in order to gain traction in the enterprise, which they need. They can certainly get into the small business area just by selling electronically, but get into the enterprises and the government enterprises. It's a very different ball game. And one of the things I have to compliment them on is they were able to do that. So they went off and hired lots of great sales guys who were able to go off and press the flesh. And you see a lot of quota-carrying AWS people walking around these days that you didn't see 2 years ago. Microsoft knows how to play the game. IBM already knows how to play the game. HP already knows how to play the game. Now Amazon is learning how to play the game. So we're finding that in selling cloud services, there's not a ton of difference than selling enterprise software.
You know, we talked about relational databases earlier. Let's cut that word in half, that phrase in half, and let's talk about relational. Maybe it is relational with people, and maybe that's the challenge for many of the people out there, the software developers I know who look at relational and think of it as a database, not as a human interaction. But sometimes I think it gets to be human and human. We're going to have to end our interview today. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, David Linthicum, Senior Vice President, Cloud Technology Partners, and a blogger for InfoWorld. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.